extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from Seattle, Washington, you are listening to Extra Time, presented by AT&T 5G. I'm Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, David Goss. New in the seat, always been a partner, but not official. You've been accepted into this soccer firm, so
your
to speak.
Your application has been reviewed.
Michele Giannone, Tudien, Univision. We love you on MLS Today. We love you on the Power Ranking Show. We are dragging you in at every single opportunity. And if you can't figure it out already, I said the words. We're in Seattle, Washington. We're on the road. I feel a little bit, I don't know, outside of my element. Normally, I'm in a basement in the dank, dark confines of my soccer cave.
Not that far off.
But it feels good to be here. It feels good to be in Seattle for what else? The CCL final second leg, 2-2 in the first leg. We went crazy on the watch-along show. No watch-along show this time around because we are here. How does it feel, Dave, to be on the road, to be sitting actually next to me? Is it a good thing, bad thing, somewhere in between?
Oh, it's great. I don't have to get 97 text messages.
Perfect.
I just have to listen to you talk the whole time. I get to hang out with Michele in person. Brad Evans and AJ De La Garza are up there behind us. Megan Rapinoe.
Oh, yeah. So just the patron saints looking over us on this this wonderful Monday.
Steph Fry as well. So it feels good. I think you've been here, I think, a little longer. You got here just before me. But you could already feel it in the city. Like people, it feels like a championship.
Yeah, I've been here since Saturday night. I flew after our RSL Galaxy game. And we're indoors, but it's raining outside.
Perfect.
Finally, I mean, now Seattle is embracing us.
Yeah.
First day of this, first big, like, training day with all the media here. Like, I was here Sunday, and we saw the whole training. Everybody's healthy. Like, Seattle is in a great mood. Schmetzer was joking around that we just got to play. We just got to play, but it wasn't raining. I was like, this is Seattle. Yeah. It has to rain.
Oh, you want it.
I want rain. Yeah. I want the real PNW experience.
And we're getting it, of course, at 9:30 p.m. Eastern.
We wore our flannels just for that. You got a vest? Man. No, it's not a vest.
Yeah. No, come on.
I mean, something insulated is required here in Seattle.
It's cold
out. It's going to be cold, I think. Bruce Anders, of course, is from here. He's telling me about all the things he brought. He has, like, you know, Under Armour for his legs and all these layers. And I texted him before I left. I was like, what should I pack, Anders? And he didn't mention any of that. He was like, it'll be all like hoodie weather, t-shirt and hoodie. You'll take off a shell. Yet here we are, 9:30 p.m. Eastern, Wednesday night. FS1, of course, Tudiane. History, we hope, made. We know somebody will celebrate. We will be there to celebrate.
Well, it's historic.
With whoever it is.
Yeah.
But we were, I'm not going to lie, you and unless today you were like, journalistically, we're neutral. Journalistically,
no.
I'm not neutral. Like, I'm 100% here.
Kelly brought champagne. So.
I work for Tudiane and Univision. Mexico, it's our main market. I'm not neutral.
Wow, he said it.
Seattle, it's like we were talking on MLS Today last week. Mm-hmm. It's done.
It's you and protocol. Charlie Davies.
90 minutes of protocol. Seattle's Anders is going to wrap this. Anders, on the first half, he got me.
Cut this part. Yeah. Please cut this part so we don't
we
curse
didn't say
it.
That. Yeah. I didn't say that.
We are going
to be doing our Thursday show on the field, after the trophy lift. You'll stick with FS1 or Tudiane, whatever you want to be on, go back and forth through the trophy lift. After that, we will be live on YouTube, and then we'll put out the podcast. But join us live on YouTube. It should be – we've done these before. We've done them at Open Cups. We've done them at different championships. It's the best moment in the game. Watching players, coaches, staff members, all the people associated with the club realize their dreams, realize their hard work, get to a promised land that, in MLS's case, we've only dreamed about. We haven't been there. We don't know what it's like. I want to know what that's like. And either we're going to get that and we're going to get heaven on earth.
Yeah.
Or we're going to get free space and the same old gut punch. So either way, you'll be there for the emotion side of it. Do you? Can we buy you a beer on Tuesday night? That's a question for
absolutely.
You, Michele.
Can I buy you guys?
No. We'll buy you one, then you can buy
us out. I saw you guys are doing one per person. I can give you two. And I can give you a general allocation.
Wow.
For my presence.
With budget.
It's a trade.
Okay.
My presence.
Perfect.
And we give you some allocation money.
Where does Andre Shinyashiki fall into this
trade? Where's our bargaining chips here? Can we get a little bit something extra in the deal? We're going to the Georgian Dragon. I say the. I didn't say it this morning, and I was castigated by Anders, and it was like a the MLS moment where, like, if you know, you don't say MLS. If you do know, you say MLS. It is the Georgian Dragon.
You've already ostracized us from the city of Austin. I'd love to be able to come back to Seattle.
I truly believe Austin would welcome me with open arms. But someday I will test that theory. He will test it next weekend when you're there for the match at Q2. But come join us. We're just going to be hanging out at the Georgian Dragon. We will buy you your first beer. Anders ordered literal carnival tickets to make it extra special. So it's not like we just walk you up to the bar. We give
That's
you a
championship
ticket.
Preparation.
Exactly. That's why Anders is here. He covers up all our blushes. You'll go to the bar, you get a drink, and we'll talk about soccer. And we'll celebrate the moment. It should be really fun.
Yeah, it's going to be cool. We haven't done anything like this in a while. We were all in LA for All-Star, and it was sort of the first chance to like get back on the ground and see people. And you've been going to games this year. But I'm really excited for it. And you mentioned with championships, it's like you can feel for players and coaches and staffs like how much they put into it. But fans are the same, right? And like waiting for this moment. We've been waiting for it as an MLS entity for a long time. But I think Seattle fans as well, like they hadn't had success in CCL. It's been a tough competition, and coming off what's gone down over the last few years, last year playoff run wasn't what they wanted. 2022 MLS Cup was not what they wanted at all. I think you can feel like fans are ready for this moment, so I'm excited to hang out.
I've been tracking via Jeremiah O'Shan. By the way, we're going to be on the Sounders at Heart podcast later today, but I've been tracking via Jeremiah the ticket sales, and he just keeps knocking it down. He's like, okay, we got 3,500. Okay, I've checked again. It looks like we have about 1,000. He put out this morning just a couple hundred tickets. They're expecting 67,000 at Lumen Field. I was not there for 2019 for that MLS Cup, which is one of my great regrets. I was there in 2016, and to speak to the fans, I remember that energy coming from that group of fans in Toronto. I cannot wait to feel the energy of 67,000 people who want the same thing that we all want, which is to see history made and to be on the right side, quote unquote, of that history. So we'll be there for the postgame show. We'll preview that in depth here in a second. But that's the beauty of what we do here. This is the AT&T 5G virtual studio, I guess, now. We got a lot more to talk about.
Studio.
Yeah, let's start with MLS in week 9, and we will transition our way into the CCL final, do a full preview here with Michele, and then we're going to have Garth Lagerwey, Brian Schmetzer, Christian Roldan, Jordan Morris roll through. We're hoping to get the all-black cleats of Joao Paulo right here on this field to both intimidate us and educate us.
We'll talk to Christian Roldan about the national team, right?
That's absolutely.
Your favorite conversation. Yeah.
That's my favorite conversation. I will fight USMNT Twitter. I'll fight you all. For my boy.
Please don't go down there.
Figuratively.
Spiritually. Yeah.
Do it on your own time, Michele.
I'm kidding. But I will defend my guy.
And rightfully so.
He's pretty easy to defend right now.
It's pretty easy to defend. Yeah. Right now?
Yeah.
The thing is, well, that's not a conversation, but it's a weird situation. We've talked about this off camera, on camera. His situation on the team.
Yeah.
He's not viewed inside the USMNT the way he's viewed in Seattle, in the way he means for the team and the way he actually plays on the field. So it's a longer, difficult conversation.
We'll talk to him about that just a little bit. We'll get into it with Christian, one of the most interesting guys in this league. Let's talk week 9, and let's start with the obvious one. We were not in Nashville. Susanna Collins was in Nashville. I've lived vicariously through the broadcast on the flight over here on ESPN, as well as through her on MLS After Dark. Remember the MLS Today show, as well as the Power Ranking show on MLS After Dark on the MLS Today podcast feed. Go subscribe. Gets you a good MLS fix between extra times and the call-up. But wow, Geodis Park, you know, the biggest soccer-specific stadium as far as spectators go. I don't know on distance. Like, maybe somebody's got more of a footprint. But as far as spectators go, and that's the most important thing, opening with wah-wah is not the right phrasing, but like sort of the expected 1-1 draw for Nashville. I had all those moments early on, post being hit, Andre Blake standing on his head. But what I'm remembering most are sort of the feelings of, and to me it felt like just a box of supporters and people and fans just overlapping, surrounding, enveloping the field in noise. And that's what you heard from everybody who was at the game, including Jim Curtin. What was your impression of this opening, knowing that we've been at these before? What's special about them? What did you feel from afar?
I think what you said, which is the energy in the building, being contained in the building. And so when you talk about home field advantages, the one that pops to mind is Orlando, right? They opened that stadium, the wall, and they were untouchable at home. It wasn't always perfect soccer. It wasn't always high scoring, but it was 12 against 11, and that was the advantage they needed. Obviously, Philly's the best team in the East, arguably the best team in the league, so it wasn't an easy test to open things up with. But I think even in the first 10 minutes, you felt the team pushed on by the fans, right? And they hit the post twice. And I thought Taylor said it well in the broadcast when he said the lineup, which is it's a 5-3-2 on the road, but it's a 3-5-2 at home. And you felt that for the first time because they've been away for eight games. And so I just think you felt the connection between the fans and the players. That's what you want. That's what they've been waiting for. I think you felt the history in the moment of for people in that market wanting this sport to succeed. You could see the emotion there. And it only gets better. That's the other thing we've learned.
100%.
The first game's special. It's epic. But the comforts and, you know, feeling like it's home. And Dave Romney's talked about how long it'll take to adjust to the field and all those things. That will get better. But from a starting point, it is exactly what they wanted, which was to have an atmosphere that no one wants to come into and that they will feel it's 3 points every time they step in there.
I've been covering this league, caring about this league for more than a decade. I don't know what the exact time it is now. And I've seen a lot of these stadiums opening. And I remember when I first started, I've told the story so many times, of just like being in a independent league baseball stadium covering MLS and pining and wishing for the days when in Kansas City and elsewhere that every time you went to a game, you felt like this was the perfect venue for what you were there to witness, what you were there to see, and what you were there to share with the people around you. And that's what it's about in these stadium openings, to me, is like community and memories. And how many memories were made that day? How many people either decided because they were there who weren't fans before or who were fans, like, okay, I'm getting season tickets. Okay, I'm more invested. Okay, this really matters. Okay, this is epic. Okay, who am I going to tell about it? And like that's what it is about to me, growth. It's about filling up the, you know, filling ourselves up and growing and growing and growing until hopefully at some point, this is all just the norm for everybody. It's not like, oh, cool, a new soccer stadium. It's like, that's what we do. That's what this sport is in this country. And Michele, you've been traversing the country, let's say. So when you saw this opener, when you go to stadiums, when you experience what I think the best experience in MLS is, which is firsthand experience, what stands out to you about what we're building and about what that building represents?
Like you're mentioning, the growth of the league. Like Nashville, I've been there when the USMNT played against Canada for qualifiers. And I think Nashville, it may sound weird, but I think it's a very underrated soccer city.
Yeah.
Especially when they played in the Nissan Stadium, the Titan Stadium, even if the atmosphere is great and you have 30, 40,000 people, you don't feel it.
Yeah.
Because it's an NFL stadium. And I think the team deserves it, because we talk about how difficult it's for an expansion team to make their first steps in the league, and Nashville has done everything right. Do you remember their first season with MLS is back? They got a hit. They had to leave.
They played one game.
I think they played one game, or they had to leave, and they had to leave the bubble. But they still were making the right steps, and I think this is the culmination and the beginning at the same time of something that is very rewarding to see. If you're a Nashville fan, if you're an MLS fan, and if you're seeing the league from outside, it's like, because I've been hearing criticism, oh, we're from the outside. Like, your guys are building 20,000 seat stadium. They look like teacups or from afar. But I think it's the right steps. And I think Nashville did something great that I was expecting, for example, LAFC to do. Like, when you go to LAFC Stadium, to Banc of California, which is a beautiful stadium, but it's 19,000. It's just 19,000, 20,000. I think Nashville understood their quality, their city, their fandom. They said, you know what? Let's do 30,000. We can feel the stadium. We can put 30,000 every weekend here. And I think that's going to motivate more teams to do the same and don't be content with just 18,000, 20,000, which is a beautiful Columbus Stadium, Minnesota. Kansas City is a beautiful stadium. Minnesota and Kansas City are two of my favorites. Cincinnati is beautiful.
They went a little bigger too, Cincinnati. They saw some of that potential as well.
Yeah, and I think this Nashville is showing to the, I don't know how big it's going to grow. The MLS is going to grow. Maybe we get to 32. I don't know what's the future ahead. Or maybe teams that haven't built that stadium, maybe Seattle, the day they want to move forward, you know, we can build a 40,000-seat stadium, 50,000, who knows? So I think Nashville is showing the league since the beginning, and now the steps they're making, like giving Walker Zimmerman the new contract, extending Hany Mukhtar, the showing the league how it needs to be done step by step. I'm super happy about it.
No, I think that's interesting, because one of the things that hit me this week was like, we're talking about Seattle and history while this happens, right? And the league is growing faster than just here's one thing everyone's focused on.
Right.
And then the other was Miami had the stadium vote, and it's not 100%, but one of the things that came out of that was they want them to talk to the University of Miami about hosting football games and it being 40,000. Yeah. And I was on somewhere looking at World Cup bids, and the idea is TFC would expand to 40,000. And you're right in that I think it's an idea of planning for what it can grow into, and I think Atlanta changed the model on a lot of that. Mm-hmm. And the other part is when you talk about Nashville as a underrated soccer city, I think we've shifted from chasing what we think are soccer cities to, if you put a good team in the right place, people will come. People care about this sport in this country. Yep. People care about teams in their market. And that's what we're seeing with Charlotte. And I think it's what we've seen with Orlando and all these other places, is that if you do things the right way, it's all there.
Yeah,
and that's exciting.
I liked what he said about culmination and the beginning, because it can feel at times when you're in those new stadiums or you have this big moment or the Sounders are hosting, you know, CCL final and have a golden opportunity to win it and make history. It can feel a little bit like a culmination of this effort to get there, but we always have to remember this is just the beginning. These are steps on the beginning of our journey, and it's not as long as some other leagues around the world, and that's okay. It means that we have not more potential down the line, but different potential, and we got to embrace that. Let's talk on the field for this game. I was a little bit heartbroken for Nashville, for the fans, for the players, that they didn't get that explosion, that one of those balls didn't somehow, you know, the Alex Mwinn one on the doorstep, for instance, didn't somehow get past Andre Blake the Octopus, but, I mean, the man is the man for the reason.
Did we call him the Octopus?
No, that's...
Because Pedro Gallese
I made that up. Just because I was like, imagine...
The goat.
I was imagining the save, and I was like, how the
Which for Jamaica
that?
Is perfect, because then you got Curry Gunn.
Yeah, he's just like throwing his hand. That's incredible save of the year.
It's incredible save.
But, like... Then you have Mikel Ura on the other side, and the union of this great team with an incredible sort of foundation and idea of who they want to be. And he was their big signing, and he gets his first goal. When I watch him now, I know he hasn't gotten the production they wanted, but I think he's more technical, he's more aware, he's more able to take advantage of like small spaces in the 18 and around the 18, as well as big spaces, which is what he did on the goal. And Gazdag with a beautiful ball. I think you can take some credit on the Gazdag take from
it. I'm feeling good about all my Gazdag takes, but I would say I didn't think Philly was wrong in the past, which was Santos does this well, Shabilko does this well, Corey Burke does this well. Now they have a guy who's all rolled into one. That's what you're seeing, right? So Sergio Santos, when he'd step on the field over the past few years, it was like, man, this guy's electric. He generates chances, he presses, he's everywhere, but he doesn't finish. Shabilko's clean on the ball, you know, likes to bring players into the game, can create. I think he's actually one of the best creative center forwards. Now you're looking at a guy, as you said, who does all of them himself, plus a guy in Carranza who does other things well alongside him. So you have this ability to sort of affect teams in different ways. And I think this is a team that obviously they don't want the ball. Obviously they're going to be a pressing team. But as you go through the season, now it looks like they finally have a guy who, if they play poorly, can pop up and win them a game. And I don't know that that's been the case really in Philly's history.
He's not going to be, I don't think he's going to be like, he's not going to be a Carlos Vela. Or a Driussi, or a guy
Ooh,
that's...
Ooh, look we'll who just got into the convo.
We'll get to that. He's not going to be that guy, but he's going to be the right piece for their system. They've been so adept at finding those pieces. Can I ask you a direct question, McKelly? I don't know if you're an instant replay guy. Corey Burke, is that a handball? Should it be a handball? Should Nashville have had an opportunity to win that game from the spot?
I don't have a good answer, so...
Me neither.
Yeah.
Honestly, It's a tough one.
What's your gut say? What do you think? You go to that monitor. It's not called on the field. I know what my take is, which is I agree with both of you that it's so like, is that an unnatural position?
Yeah.
Is that, can he? It's definitely not deliberate. There's nothing deliberate about it. From one angle, it looks like his arm is extended. From the angle from the back, which is the one that Chris Pinto was looking at and focusing on, they say zooming in on.
Yeah.
It looks pretty tight to his body. And so I was okay with that. And I think you notice by the reaction of the players on the field.
Yeah.
Like if they go in an uproar, maybe it's a different story, but nobody seemed.
I tend to agree with that. My gut feeling is that one. Like it was okay and it was the right call to keep it the way it was called on the field.
Yeah. I don't think
that's my gut.
I don't think there's clear and obvious, but.
Yeah. That's the thing. And
Max's
we saw it
arm. We know
at
that.
At the end of the RSL Galaxy game, when Galaxy gets the goal disallowed, when we're seeing the replay, is it clear and obvious? And we had to like rewatch it and watch it. And we couldn't even understand it on the field. And during the broadcast, we didn't have like the exact angle because it was at the end, it was an offside. But at the beginning, we thought it was a foul of Williams. But at the end, no, it was an offside that was called. And we didn't have the angle to know and see if he was onside or offside. So I think at those moments, you see, you got to go with your gut maybe and what you think. And I think that at the end, it was the right call.
Chris Pinto decided that was his deal.
Yeah.
I think if it's called on the field, I don't think he reverses it.
Yeah.
But yeah, let's put a bow on Nashville in the stadium. We'll talk about this so much more. We have a CCL final to get to. And Anders is texting me saying, you're blowing past the time codes that we agreed on, which is the most extra time thing of all time.
So let's wrap it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's
do a CCL preview.
Just quick take. Quick take is Austin FC are legit.
Yes.
Winning at home in Copa de Tejas is awesome. Driussi is an incredible player, an MVP candidate for sure. He is overperforming his XG by 100%, but that just might be how talented he is.
And if you want to hear more MLS Today on any of your podcast feed or Spotify, just search MLS
MVP,
Today.
MVP from Runner.
Yeah.
I mean, somebody here does, I mean, I thought we started
doing
MVP
weekly front MVP standings.
That was our gig. MLSsoccer.com had that.
How many trophies did you have made up to give out over the course of the season? Or is it all building towards one?
No, it's building towards one.
Oh, so I'm not going to give a first quarter, second quarter, third quarter.
No. It's building. It's building. If you see my tweet, it's an update.
Okay.
It's an update.
Okay.
So you see like the arrows going down, arrows going up. I have a little list with the eyes, like outside looking in.
Okay.
The thing with Drewsy, he's the MVP front runner, but I think Fagundes on his shadow, it's balling like it's never balled before. And I think it's also kudos to Josh Wolf. Austin FC and giving Josh Wall giving the confidence and the opportunity to Danny Pereira, the first pick on the draft a year ago. Who knew? His explosion. He's when Alex Ring is balling also. I think the whole team. And I know the schedule is gonna get tough. I'm not that extreme on your side, but
it's a playoff team. But
I don't think they're gonna keep up this pace. Are they a playoff team? Yes, I believe they are, but not Western Conference. Top two.
Look, if they prove us wrong, they start winning on the road, and they got a bunch of road games coming up. I think it's 7 of 10.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, Austin fans, I believe in you.
All right. Honored to say you're not allowed to talk about
Austin
anymore.
All right, let's go. Eastern, 10 p.m. Eastern is the actual kick time, I guess, for the Champions League final second leg. Again, TuneIn, FS1, will have the likes of Garth Lagerwey and Brian Schmetzer and Christian Roldan and Jordan Morris coming up. Maybe Joao Paulo if we get lucky. Let's talk about this game. Pumas. Not necessarily the Gigantes of the past that we're used to seeing in this moment, the Americas, the Tigres, the Monterreys, etc. But a team with a ton of history and a team that sees an opportunity. Michele, tell me what you see from the visitors coming in, because we're going to absolutely, you know, paint the town rave green here in a second on the Sounders. What's at stake for Pumas? What's the important things to know about them? And can anyone stop Dineno? Because he is just absolutely killing people these days.
The thing to know about Pumas is that first, me and I think everybody in Mexico, we talk about this in MLS today, we're shocked that they're even here. At the beginning of the tournament, we were talking about they were not the weakest, because I don't think any Liga MX team is weak. The least strongest
of the
like they taking out Cruz Azul in the semifinal was a shock for everyone. Lilini is doing an unbelievable job. Like this team is thin. They've been playing both tournaments with no more than, honestly, 14, 13 players. Now they lose Mosso to the second leg, which is probably his best offensive player outside of Dineno. He's a liability on defense, but he brings so much on the offensive side. Palmer Ortiz, the center back, is coming back, which is why Mosso can take the liberties that he takes in the games. He's been a staple. He was suspended for the first game, and he actually went in play with the Mexican national team. This is a team that also is playing with a lot of pressure on Wednesday, because they are fighting for that Mexican heritage. The last time a Mexican team lost a CONCACAF Champions or CONCACAF, whatever you guys want to call it.
CONCACAF Champions, by the way, the better brand.
CONCACAF Champions? I say CONCACAF Champions, but you know, sometimes people from CONCACAF say, it's CONCACAF Champions League, please.
But before it was the Campeones, CONCACAF de Champions.
Yeah. So the last time a Liga MX team lost, it was Pumas against Saprissa. That was in 2005. We're talking 16 years of Liga MX dominance. And now they could be the ones that allow MLS team to win. I don't see how Pumas is winning this game. I honestly don't. They played yesterday. They saved some players, but at the end, Dineno had to come in to score two goals and get access to the Liguilla. They have to fly here. They have to play on turf. They don't play on turf. The team is limited. Lopez, he's playing on one leg. Dineno is playing on one leg. They don't have Mosso. Seattle, everyone is healthy. And Schmetzer, I was here yesterday, Schmetzer was talking about how Seattle is, everybody's available.
Yeah.
The team already, and he mentioned something that I think is very interesting. Like the team was very pressured. The players felt the pressure before the game at Pumas. They felt the atmosphere, the 50,000 fans, the altitude, the rain, the wind, and the pressure of, we are favorites. They know they're favorites. And I love something that Jamar said. I don't know if it can translate exactly what he meant in English. He said, we have confidence in us but we are not confident. I don't know if that makes sense in English. In Spanish, it makes more sense that we have confidence of what we can do, but we're not lacking.
We're not feeling like we're the favorites.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Like, it's not ours to lose, so to speak. Yeah.
Exactly. So I think, and I've said it before, I think Seattle is the best team of the two at home with 67,000 fans at turf with the whole team. Pumas played yesterday, Sunday. They have to travel. I don't see how Pumas can. And I've been objective. I know. I'm already popping the champagne.
I don't want to see how.
I put my journalistic hat on.
Freaking man. Like, I just.
I'm going to take my journalistic hat on and say that Wednesday it's a protocol. It's done. Anders, start taking out the champagne.
Cut it. Hit us with a jump cut there.
And I mean, it's a final.
I think
anything can happen.
And again, when we talk, and I'm going to wrap this up, Seattle didn't play at Seattle standard on last Wednesday at all. Not even close. Especially Joao Paulo and Rusnak. They didn't have a great game of what we expect of them. Morris didn't beat his men once the whole game. And still, they were better than Pumas.
Yeah, and I agree with you. And Pumas, I think, against Cruz Azul, we saw everything was in the home leg. That's where they had the energy. That's where they had the belief. And then they held on to it at Cruz Azul. They can't hold on to anything coming here. Plus, away goal is not the same. So I get what you're saying. I agree with you. The reality of finals is Dineno pops up on a free kick in the eighth minute. Now you panic. Now you're pushing. Sounders have to break down a low block. That's maybe not what they're most comfortable with. Jaimar hasn't played a ton, so now you're having trouble getting out of the back. I think there's obviously the formula for how it goes wrong, but Michele's right in that, one, this is the best opportunity ever, and nothing from the first leg changed that. Because we said that last week, and then the game happens, and it still is just win. And win against a team that's missing their second best player, win against a team that had to deal with the playoff pressure. Although I thought it was telling that they did rotate, needing to win to get to La Liga, which for me says, we're in a final. We don't win things very often. Our focus is here, and we'll go to the next tournament when we get there.
And in Liga MX starts another tournament in a month and a half. One caveat is that we're going to see the same Pumas tactically and approaching the game the way we saw on the second leg against Cruz Azul. They had the goal the away goal that the goal ahead at home on the first leg. So they sat on a low block and it was impossible for Cruz Azul. I think we're going to see that. And like you said, I think if Seattle can break that in the first 15-20 minutes, I think it's a wrap.
And that's where, to me, the game is won and lost, and we'll talk to all of them about it, is Seattle has to come out like they did against Leon and make Pumas feel like there's no hope and make 67,000 fans feel like they're in it and they're flowing and this is over. And I think that's the best route. If it's a grind and a grind and a grind, Seattle has more quality. They have more subs. They have more depth. They didn't play this weekend. They have all those advantages. But I think it gets in Pumas' favor as the game wears along. You have to come out, do what Columbus did to you in 2020, do what you did to Toronto in 2019, and sort of just make the other team feel like there's no hope. This Seattle team's capable of it. They literally just did it 3 weeks ago or 2 weeks ago against Leon and NYCFC. That's what you want
to
see.
That's, to me, where if I'm looking at a part of the field for the Sounders that will dictate this, it's very clearly Ladero, Rusnak, and Joao Paulo. Like, they're going to have to be cleaner, more purposeful, let's say, and a little bit quicker on the ball than they were in Mexico. In Mexico, it was 1-2, don't take huge risks, move up. We're not at our absolute cleanest. Jordan's not exactly at his best. I want to see those guys sort of take control, take the ball, move Pumas around a little bit, create the gaps that you need for Roldan, who's so adept at exploiting those spaces, whether it's in behind or dropping in with Roldan, other Roldan, of course, Alex coming around him, or Jordan Morris in those moments of transition where Nico Ladero is so good at receiving the ball from those deep line guys, receiving the ball from the center backs, getting himself in open position, turning, finding a Jordan Morris run. Once you get Pumas backpedaling, that's where they're going to be at their best. I just wonder how many opportunities they're going to get in that sense. To me, I look at this Sounders team and I look at sort of the career of Ladero, of Rui Diaz, of, you know, even the Roldans, but in particular those guys in Joao Paulo. This is why you sign them. Yes, to win MLS Cups. Yes, to dominate at times in MLS and to be always at the top, always a playoff team. These are guys with the experiences, the know-how, the talent, the ability to beat Liga MX teams, to beat the best in Liga MX teams, to match up against the best Mexico has to offer. Pumas is not that. This is their time. This is why you went and signed Rusnak and elevated him into this group. This is all of this is building to this point. I want to see them take advantage of it. I want to see them play their best.
Can I ask you a question? Because we've been talking about this on our side. Direct question. And given that Seattle started on 2009, if they win on Wednesday, are they the best MLS team of all time? Club, MLS club of all time.
That can, the camera being knocked over was Anders just running through
literally
it.
Right before Anders hits the wrap.
I mean, the trophy case and being the first. And my second question, you can answer it in the second, when I'm gone.
Yeah.
Is Nico Lodeiro, where is Nico Lodeiro in the MLS history if he lifts that trophy on Wednesday? I think he has to be top five ever.
Who would be, here's a sort of a question to a question. Who
but
would
then
be
we
a,
have to bring Garth Hagerway yes. in so that
who
he
would
can
be
tell
a
us.
Better, who would be a better modern MLS team? Accomplishments, consistency. Now you're seeing player development as well from these Sounders than Seattle. I don't know that I have one quick off the top of my head.
No, I wouldn't say there's any. I mean, LAFC has now years to sort of catch up, right?
Yeah.
You're talking 2009, so
but
what can LAFC
it's apples
do?
And oranges. They don't have the, like, I don't think you can push them into the conversation based on one shield.
Yeah. No, but if they win, I mean,
sure.
if they win Cup this year now.
I'm saying right now.
It has to be Seattle.
Yeah,
I would agree.
If they lift the trophy on Wednesday, I don't think. And I know the league is it's way older and Galaxy and this United, but this trophy, I think it changes everything. And it's not like their trophy case is empty.
Yeah.
I mean, it's very full.
Yeah.
All right, well, 10 p.m. Eastern. Tudien, FS1. We will be there with you after the trophy lift.
One
on
hour pregame show on Tuesday.
Oh, here we go.
That's all right. That's all where, right. if you want to feel the emotions, soak into it, that's where you go.
Yeah, should be awesome. All right, we have Garth Lagerwey, Brian Schmetzer, Christian Roldan, Jordan Morris coming up for you. Let's chat with Garth. It's an AT&T 5G call to the field. This is the second one, Garth. This is the follow up. We all remember MLS for RSL. We have not yet coalesced in the same way with a hashtag around Seattle, but we have all coalesced in the facts that you are the Russell Crowe on this panel right now. Are you not entertained? Get you in the middle of thousands of people, like a gladiator.
Who will
like
stand
a,
with us?
Like a gladiator. Rally the troops. It was like Roman Empire stuff. Who convinced you to do this, or is this your idea to go do the speech on the field?
No, the guys just said, hey, you seem enthusiastic about this, and you're dumb enough to try it. So, like, we're going to put you out there, give you a microphone, and see what happens. So,
I heard there was a little bit of traffic beforehand that maybe you...
I didn't drift into my parking spot, but it was definitely like a hard turn around the corner. Tires were squealing,
A little rubber on the road.
And I don't move as quickly as I used to, Andrew. So there's a little huffing and puffing as I kind of rounded the corner, and they cleared the way for me.
There you go.
They can't just delay the game for you.
Man of the hour.
That's not how
we got
works.
A speech.
The best was the national anthem singer whose podium I was borrowing and who normally goes up at that time was literally just looking at me like, who is this crazy person? Just run up to this podium and what's him, more importantly, what is he going to do? Because I need that microphone back at some point to sing.
But at least they knew because you had your credential on.
There you were.
That was very proper of you.
Well, technically you're supposed to take it off.
No. I definitely should have taken
technically,
it off.
Technically.
I'm with you.
Listen, no one knows who you are, so it's hard for you to get around.
I'm just happy the coat didn't burst, right? I mean, it's that guy in a little coat. You got to be careful in those moments. You start moving your arms around. So, I mean, we kept the structural integrity. That's
you looked real. Regal.
It's
time to do an interview, by the way.
It's time to do extra time.
Yeah, there we go.
Let's make sure that's not going
to
happen.
So there's a little bit of like poetry to this. Iliad and the Odyssey, so to speak. A long journey, lots of foes to slay, etc. You almost got there with RSL. You're back again. Tell me how much you've thought about that first run in these weeks, months leading up. How much you've thought about it in the sense of like, this is our goal. Here's how we want to get here. I've been here before. Here's how I felt. Here's strategically what I think we have to do. How much reference point do you go back to?
It's been a lot. It's been a vision of mine. There at the local TV here pulled up an interview that I did in 2015, right after I took the job, and I said in the interview, we want to win MLS Cups, but we want to win Champions League, and that was something that seemed very far away at the time. And it's definitely something where you don't know if you'll ever get another chance at it. That's how rare it is, and it's really special to be part of it again. And just this week, messaging with Javi Morales and Jason Kreis and Nap Orchers and Ned Grabovoy and Timbers fans forgive of them. It's just, you know, they're retired now. It's you know, they were once with Salt Lake and, you know, but just, you know, just being part of that kind of community again and being in that moment and understanding, you know, look, understanding too that, you know, we were 2-2, same setup and we lost. So, you know, anybody who thinks this is going to be easy is crazy. And Pumas is a really good team and they're going to give everything they have, and they had another good performance on the weekend. And you know, but if we can do this, I think it would be historically meaningful for the league. I think it would be a game changer for the Sounders as a brand. You know, to be on a global stage playing for trophies against champions from other continents as opposed to friendlies. And look, I think this is where the league is going. You know, if you look at the last half dozen years, and the MLS has stacked semifinalists now in Champions League, meaning we've consistently had semifinalists. This is our third finalist, I believe, in the last 5 years. So we're starting to stack finalists. But somebody's got to break through and win the thing. And if we can do that, then I think that that's really it's a great moment on a couple of fronts. I think it's a great moment leading into the League's Cup starting in 2023. I think you're really seeing potentially a more competitive Liga MX MLS interaction. You know, one of the things that I think is really cool for our team, you know, when you say, look at how maybe we can do in this, we've beaten three Mexican teams in the last 12 months. You know, if you look at Tigres and Santos Laguna and Leon between League's Cup and Champions League, and they're just, those experiences didn't happen 5 years ago, yeah. 10 years ago. So I think it's pretty incredible that our guys are as well prepared as they can be. And then look, I think it's an exciting time to be an American soccer fan. We qualify with the youngest team in this cycle to reach the World Cup. And obviously we're hosting in 2026. And one of the things that's really resonated in this week has been with the entire Pacific Northwest community, with all of Seattle, to say this is our last chance to impress FIFA, that we should be a host city for the 2026 World Cup. So I think there's all these global things, all these bigger picture things that kind of flow together into Wednesday. And they do make it the biggest game in club history. And I think one of the more important games, potentially, if you win, in league history. So
I know how it is when guys from old teams get back together. They have the same stories that they go back to and like retell, and there's different folds. So I would ask you, what's the story that those RSL guys all tell? And what's the story so far that you think the Seattle team would tell when those gatherings happen?
Look, it depends on the outcome, right? I mean, it's great to say you made the final and that's fun and all that, but it's particularly at this stage, being the fifth finalist, like, you know, it's going to be real bitter if you lose. There's no, let's not dance around that. Yeah. I mean, this is going to be ecstasy or heartbreak. I mean, it's immortality or combined to the dustbin of history, confined, excuse me. So like it's definitely a polarized outcome, I think, depending on that. And look, in terms of telling stories, I mean, when we get old, we all tell stories. And, you know, I don't know that there's one particular one other than with that Salt Lake team. You had, you know, you came back twice, right, from 1-0 and 2-1, and you equalized twice. And when you equalized late, you had this real uptick of emotion, right? And you had this, like, man, we can really do this. And look, at that time, when you're playing against Monterrey, whose budget is, you know, 5x what ours was, maybe more. And they have Suazo and they have Denigri and they have some guys who are just incredible players relative to where MLS was at that time. You know, that was a David Goliath scenario. And, you know, but RSL had won, had been unbeaten, I think, in 34 games heading into that second leg. And so you thought, man, maybe we got a chance. And what's striking is how different that fact pattern is now. You know, this is a level playing field. You know, the payrolls are relatively similar between us and Pumas. You know, we now have guys that have played in World Cups and Copa Libertadores and Copa Americas and won those competitions. You know, and, you know, you have that talent not in one guy, one DP, but you got it all over the roster. You know, you have multiple guys that are going to play in the World Cup. And I think it's a fun exercise in that when you compare that 2011 team, that first finalist, to the 2022 Sounders, and look at how far the league has come. Because I think we spent some time saying we want to go faster, we want to go faster, we want to get better. But man, in 11 years, we have come an awful long way. And it, again, it'd be really fun to win.
So we want a team to win this as MLS, and it's obviously your focus. Was there anything different this year of planning for CCL or focusing on CCL, or is it just that the roster is just finally good enough to manage?
Look, the roster's good enough to manage, but I got to take my hat off to Craig Weibel here, right? I mean, in that we added a pretty good free agent in Albert Rusnak, and, you know, to again to compliment the guys we already had, right? The Jordan Morris, the Christian Roldan that you guys had on the show today, and Nico and Raul and JP and Steph Fry and Yamar, and you know, it just goes on and on and on, right? And that's the cool thing, right? Mm-hmm. Is it doesn't just it's one transaction and it was a good one and that helped us, but you know, this has been years in the making, right? I mean, we've been building this team, you know, certainly since I would really say since the middle of 2017. That was when we added Leardom and Victor Rodriguez, and two guys aren't with us anymore, but that was the turning point. That was when we turned the page, because the Sounders generation that had come through and in 14 had won Supporter Shield and Open Cup, and that was the group largely that won the 2016 title. And then in 17, we turned it over. I mean, we switched 13 players in that offseason, pretty unusual for a champion. And then from 17, we started building, and in 18, we had Rui Diaz. And I would say since 18, we've really had this, and we've really tried to add kind of one piece a year without subtracting. And we really do feel like this is the best group that we've had, and we've been very methodical about it and very strategic.
Build to this moment?
Yeah, to build to this moment. Okay. And you know, and I can't say, hey, the last 5 years is all about winning the 2022 Champions League. Like, it wasn't that specific, but it was, can we get better every single year before we get too old and take a shot at something like this, something really cool like this. And look, the other thing that I want to give some praise to is Craig Weibel spent several months working with the staff in the offseason on an injury protection plan, you know, because when you look at, again, I've said this publicly, our best players are 30 years old. And so if you want to talk about balancing competitions and stuff like that, the good news is we have a pretty robust development program. We just won the GA Cup again, back-to-back GA champions. That's pretty cool.
Somebody was there to
Yeah,
somebody,
the most
somebody,
important
somebody
tournament
called
that is.
Yeah.
I mean, this is secondary.
You're talking the voice of GA Cup.
Yeah, I mean, like, and I love listening to you, and it's, you know, as you and Bobby were calling it again, you know, like, that is the most prestigious youth tournament in North America. And, you know, it's kind of fun to think that those kids are going to play for the Sounders pretty soon now too. And, you know, but where I'm going is with this injury prevention thing, you can't have 30-year-old players play 2 and 3 times a week. Yeah. You have to balance what that group looks like and be willing to rotate and be willing to be strategic in terms of how you pick your big moments. And we've just done a really good job, and hats off to our performance staff and our medical staff. But we're pretty much, with some minor exceptions, fully healthy for the biggest game.
Yeah.
Right. And we were a big, huge point of emphasis for us was that we were not going to spike in the offseason and then crash, because too often teams get in, they're like, for that first round of Champions League, we got to be all in. And like, and then inevitably you just can't do it that fast. Right. And so, like, I think if you ask me anything strategically, I think we had a lot of experience and we've been in this tournament. The Sounders have been in the tournament, I think, 7 times now. And so we had a lot of collective institutional knowledge about what not to do. And I think we were pretty successful in ramping up in a sustainable manner, where such that now hopefully we're playing our best soccer at the most important moment. And then even after this tournament, hopefully we're not going to fall off a cliff. But we've been able to get some young guys some good minutes. And, you know, we're excited about what that looks like for the future of the team as well, to have that balance, to have these guys, young guys pushing through, to have the experienced guys that can win you big matches. And hopefully that is the formula that will carry us through for another year or two.
How did you experience the late stages of the game in Mexico? Emotionally, how did you cope, deal with that? What came out of you at that time,
so
whether voluntarily or not?
Adrian,
What will Wednesday feel like, do you think?
I think you'll laugh at me, Andrew, because I know you have a young family like I do. And so my wife was watching the game. It was after bedtime.
Of course,
we're watching the game on the couch together, and she turns to me, you know, ahead of the second penalty and says, "You better not wake anybody up."
Oh, yeah. My wife was like, why are you yelling? I'm in my basement. 3 floors up, she's like, "I can hear you. Stop."
And so I'm there, right? And so my wife then turns her camera and she's like, "I'm going to film you so you can see what you look like when you get moments like this." And so I'm pacing and I'm, you know, back and forth, and, you know, Nico scores and I went berserk and jumping up and down and fist pumping and I look like a crazy person. you know, and the dog was like barking and like, you know, just like, you know, what's wrong with you? Like, you're having a seizure, like, you know. So anyway, it was exciting. It was a big moment. And, you know, again, it's this kind of eerie parallel deja vu, you know, been there before, 2-2 late equalizer kind of thing. Like, it all kind of washes over you. And, you know, and look, to be clear, GMs don't kick a ball. We don't play the game. There's nothing. People have been asked, like, oh, you nervous? I'm like, I mean, I'm not nervous. There's nothing I can do about it. Right. Like, you know, so we just tried to prepare the group and keep everybody calm. And I think that's the takeaway from that game, was that we stayed calm because we've been in that moment.
I'm doing the Schmetzer here. Yep. How many times did he do that in that game?
Yep, exactly. And we didn't get away from ourselves. You know, I think even when we were down 2-0, I thought we were arguably the better team. Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying it was dominant, nothing like that. It was a highly competitive game, as you would expect, on the road in Mexico. And we hung in there and we stuck with it. We showed our mentality. And I think that's a credit to us. And look, and now we got to do what we did in MLS Cup 2019. We got to come out in front of what'll be a sold-out crowd, you know, I think in excess of 65,000 people, and you know, bring it home.
So you mentioned that crowd, the atmosphere. You've been around this league since the start. What is happening in Seattle? And like, this championship, I think we're hoping will be next level, but it feels like this city is sort of the dream that everyone would have had in 1996 or 2002 or 5. And I could keep naming years because it took a while to get here.
Yeah, look, there are things about working for the Seattle Sounders that are not replicable, at least not yet. And there are, you know, Atlanta obviously has replicated the crowds and the atmosphere, and, you know, tip of the cat, Nashville, obviously spectacular opening, and Cincinnati's done well, and Charlotte, and, you know, just every time a new team comes in, like, you get a little bit more hope, right? You get that foundation gets a little bit stronger, right? But like the way I can, I'll try to tell a quick story here. And, you know, we went into the offseason, and it's Weibel's, you know, first year with us in terms of going into an offseason. I think we had 6 or 7 free agents. And obviously we were interested in Albert as well. And Weibel's just like, he kept every day walking my office. What's our plan? Like, we got to have a plan. There's no way, like, these guys aren't coming back. You know that, right? Like, we're going to have to sign like 15 guys. Like, we got to have, and I'm like, no, just let's give everybody a chance. Let's see what they want to do. And everybody came back. And it's just like, when you're at a smaller club, it doesn't happen. The guys don't all choose to come back. The guys don't say, there's no way we're passing up the chance to play for the Sounders in front of the crowd. And that's when I say it's not replicable. I don't mean that it's literally not repeatable, but that it is the crowd. Like, as much as I'd love to stand in front of you and tell you how brilliant I am, it's not the case. I mean, like, it's the crowd. It's the fans. It's the support. When you have that level of enthusiasm and relevancy, you know, that's the key word in this community. It trickles down through every layer of the organization. And, you know, you have our ops guy has been here for 12 years. We've had the same medical team for 12 years. You know, like, all of these little things that you don't think about. You guys know we've had analytics for a decade. Yeah. Like, all of these things roll up and ladder up into, we have the fan base that allowed us the resources before anybody else had them. We had smart ownership and plugged all the money back into the club. And, you know, we invested wisely, and we've been able to build this thing and build this thing and build this thing. And, you know, look, when you look out over the horizon and you say New York City FC, they have the algorithm. You know, I may be smart, but I don't know how long I can hold off an algorithm, especially a global algorithm that can move. It has unlimited money and unlimited players and can move people around. But we're going to do our best, and we're going to stick with it as long as we can. And you know, again, you have to have everything, right? You have to have an ownership group that's willing to invest. And our ownership group has been amazing, you know, to take the resources that they've gotten from the fan base. And again, to help not just us, but, you know, you guys probably know a little about, we're going to open a new training facility now in 2024, which I think is going to be the envy of the league. And, you know, just those types of long-term commitments that really aid the stability of the franchise. And that's what allows you to make strategic long-term plans. And that's what allows you to ladder up over a 4 or 5 year period, even into, do we maybe have a team good enough to win Champions League?
I do love that he rattled off the, like, we'll just level up, but we'll throw 3 finals in there while we're getting there, right? Oh, 2017, we had to flip our roster, so it was a down year. We only went to a final. Ladder, yeah. 2019, we only hosted a final. Man, it's tough to be you sometimes.
It's been good. It's like I said, it's definitely not me. You know, it takes a village, and we are really, really lucky to have staff. And again, the other comparison, 2011. We had 11 people on the Salt Lake staff. 11. That was the coaching staff. That was the medical team. That was everything. 11 guys. And we got 40 now for Seattle. So again, if you want to talk about how we've grown, and look, one of the fun things about my job has been to understand that, whereas in Salt Lake, again, with 11 folks, you got to be better, and you have to work around the clock personally, and you have to be invested, and you have to scout players, and you have to get in the trenches and all that. The skill here is the reverse. If you have 40 people, now if I can make the people around me just 1% or 2% better and empower them, now they're going to, boom, now you get that geometric growth, right? And so we're so good now in player development. We're so good in analytics, and we're so good on the medical side. You know, like there's all these then different departments that level up, and that's what produces the overall outcome. You know, that is sustainable success.
And I think we know what we hope the overall outcome on Wednesday might be. We will not jinx it. We will not talk about it. We will just be there to witness history. Garth Lagerwey, coming full circle here.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. Look, you guys have been here for along the journey as well. And there's this bit of nostalgia, though, right? For those of us who have been down here and like, for all of us collectively. And I know we haven't had an MLS for RSL type, you know, and look, Seattle doesn't lend itself to that.
I think that's also a sign of the times, too.
Yeah.
Yep. Other teams before are thinking, oh, wow, you got there. Now they're thinking, oh, hell no, I want to be the one. We have the capability to do that. We don't want you to be it. We want to be it because it's going to happen.
And certainly LAFC would say that. Yeah. Certainly NYCFC would say that, rightfully
Toronto
so.
Toronto fans are not rooting for you.
Yep. No, that's a great way to put it, Andrew. That this is a sign of progress. And likewise, I've gotten enough messages to tell you that maybe not publicly,
right?
But I think there's a lot of folks that are behind us, you know, all over the soccer community, all over MLS, all over U.S. soccer, who we're ready. We're ready to see if
we'll
somebody can
be field side with a smoked salmon, just as Seattle in our flannels, as Seattle as we can get.
We could check champagne. I was told that's not a good idea to bring champagne into the stadium, but you know, maybe.
But hopefully next time we interview you on Wednesday night, it'll be.
And when we do, well, not on Wednesday night, but a different night, we'll do about an hour on Leagues Cup. I got the reference in there, and I like, if he's GA Cup focused, I'm Leagues Cup focused. We don't have time for that. But Garth Lagerwey, big night on Wednesday. Good luck.
Thanks, man. I really appreciate it. Thanks for having me, guys.
It's an AT&T 5G call to the field. We got one of the Roldans, the elder Roldan, Christian Roldan. What's up, man? You just told us a story off camera that you need to tell us on. We cut you off. You were on the field in Mexico City. Someone asked you a very perceptive question. What was that question?
Yeah, one of the players during the penalty, he said, are you guys brothers? I said, yeah. Can you not tell by the eyebrows or the beard? You know, we're only 13 months apart, so I'll give him that.
Don't you also both wear Roldan on the back of your shirt?
We do. I should have generally. Just turned around. you know.
If it was me, I would have just said no to be difficult, but you're a nicer person.
So we just got done watching training. It's wonderful to be back watching soccer and not actually games to see that vibe in training. And you and Alex, we see it on the field, obviously, but watching you in training, seeing the connection, seeing the understanding, tell me what it's like in that sense to play with your brother, how the communication works, how the relationship works on the field.
Yeah, well, I think we're able to communicate a lot more comfortable than other teammates because we've known each other, obviously, for a longer time. We know that, you know, even if I get under him a little bit more, he's not going to take it personally. And that's the most important thing, understanding that we're just here to help each other out. And the beauty of playing with my little brother is that he understands exactly my strengths, what I want to do, the runs that I make. And I think it's just a nice treat for us. It definitely makes our team better having us, you know, link up together, and hopefully we have many more years to play together.
So this is the big week. This is the one that you guys have been waiting for, working towards. It's now here. We've been waiting for it for a decade. I love this tournament. I've loved it ever since I first saw it. I mean, my first memories are even pre-RSL. What's your first CCL memory? Do you have one? When do you remember seeing a game? Feeling this tournament?
Honestly, feeling the tournament was being at Club America, subbing in, gassed after 10, 15 minutes in altitude. You know, it was my rookie season. We actually had a chance. We go up 1-0. And then just downpour, you know, them just getting on top of us. You know, that's what CCL is all about. You know, one team goes up a goal, and then the other team just throws nine guys forward. And, you know, sometimes it's about managing the storm, and in that moment we couldn't.
So when we talk about this competition, this run, you know, big games, big moments, big players, you are one of the first now mentioned with Seattle. The way you've played, it feels like you've elevated your game Was there something that you've changed? Is there something that shifted, or we just weren't paying attention before?
No, I started the game at center mid, or the whole Champions League at center mid. I think I started the second game at center mid, and then at halftime they switched myself and Albert. And I think that was a moment for us to stretch the opponent and get a little bit more composure in Albert in the midfield, get him more touches. And I think that's been the change that we needed. We can play in a low block with Albert in the middle and me out wide. We can dominate possession with Albert in the middle. So we can be a bit on the versatile end with us changing. But that moment, I think, has really helped us going forward.
Is this your favorite position?
I don't know, man. I still don't
know.
How do
you choose one? You know,
I still don't know where my best or favorite position is. Alex thinks it's me out wide.
Yeah.
I think he likes that because I defend for him, though.
I was going to say, there seems like maybe a little bit of selfishness there, but like, oh, okay, we can interchange it. You're going to recover, right? Like, you got me, huh?
But yeah, I mean, it's nice because I get to hang out in the pocket and just wait for the ball. And we have guys that are going to find those passes. So it's a fun position to be in. Everybody wants to attack first. So I'm happy to be part of it.
What are you thinking when you're trying to find space, exploit space? It seems to be sort of like your superpower in a way on the field of understanding, okay, here's the rotation. Here's where I'm going to drift. Here's where I'm going to get the ball. Here's the touches. We watch training. Like, God, it's so efficient with the way that you control the ball and understand how things are going to move around you. Has that always been innate to you? And are you thinking about that actively on the field? Or is it just sort of like, I'm in the flow, I see it?
I was just thinking this, to be honest. I don't think my tactical awareness wasn't as good as it is now. And it's something that I've improved on. And I think being with the national team, being with Greg, has certainly given me another set of eyes to elevate my game. And then me wanting to watch more games, me understanding the spaces that that open up based on where players are. So for me, it's a combination of a lot of things. And having a guy that understands my game in Alex, like if he goes high, you know, I understand that if the fullback releases to him, the space is going to be in behind the fullback. You know, it's as simple as that. And it's just, you know, repetitive. It rinse and repeat, and I think that's been getting into a rhythm in that way has helped me quite a bit.
We've seen a lot in this run, but one of my favorite moments in MLS is when you hit the blind ball across the back line when you get played through. It's not just Alex. It feels like Rui Diaz, but especially Jordan, you know where they're going to be, and you feel so comfortable with them.
Yeah, and it started a little bit last year when we were playing a 5-4-1, and I was the right side, but I wasn't playing like a right winger. I was playing like a right 10.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've played that with the national team a little bit. So I think that has, you know, brought a different aspect to my game, just being more comfortable in the pocket. It's been, you know, 2-3 years of me being able to play in the pocket. You know, if you asked me to play in the pocket my rookie year, I would have been like, I don't feel comfortable. I don't know what the pocket is, you know. Yeah. So it's been great so far, man.
I saw the tweet. After the game, you must have got back to the locker room. You're like, oh, man, gotta love CONCACAF.
I was in doping. Okay. Able to, you know, enjoy my teammates.
Killing a little time.
Yeah.
Walk me through what you're thinking in that moment. I know what we were thinking. We watched the game. We did, like, the watch-along show. We're freaking out the whole time. All the referee decisions. It felt like, you know, waves and waves of emotion. How did you experience that game emotionally?
Yeah, it's always going to be dramatic, you know, in Champions League, and I think that's the beauty of it. You know, sometimes it doesn't go our way, sometimes it does, and you know, it easily could have gone in Pumas's way, and you know, if it wasn't for really that last PK, you know, we're not as happy coming into, you know, this game, you know, moving forward, but. You know, sometimes call goes your way, and you know, sometimes you feel like there was contact, and sometimes there's no contact, and it's a penalty. So it was just one of those moments where it's like, man, you just smile. You're back in the locker room. You're in doping, and you're like, man, what was that? And I think that's the beauty of CONCACAF.
Thank God he kicked your knee as well. Yeah. That's what we're thinking. I'm like, okay, well done.
Listen, this was the first time it's ever gone in our direction.
Do you know what free space is in this competition?
It's always bad.
Yeah.
If a whistle gets blown in stoppage time in CCL, we all leave because that means it's bad. But it wasn't for you guys.
Look, you put yourselves in positions to try to impact the game. You know, in that moment, I'm trying to stay in the box so that if something happens, it happens.
One of the things you've done in your career, Alex, we see it as well, is like that half extra gear of like working that little bit harder. Is it something you see? Is it conscious or is it just you guys play to the 95th minute when everyone else plays to the 90th?
Comes back to my parents, man. They came here with nothing and they've always told us like, you got to work harder than every single one of your teammates, your opponents. So, man, they're great. And they're the reason why myself and Alex are here and my older brother works for Galaxy. We just don't give up. And hopefully we continue to have that attitude.
I wonder, sorry, real quick. So you're from LA and we know what a Pumas, a Club America, León means in LA. And I grew up in New York with the same. The logos are everywhere, every soccer game you went to. What does it mean to be on this stage and go and play at the Universitario and have that experience? And sort of, does this feel like a coming of age moment for you?
Yeah, certainly. My uncle is a huge Pumas fan.
Oh, there you go.
I haven't spoken to him, so hopefully I didn't let him down. But, you know, we would watch games all the time and, you know, they'd be playing in that stadium, you know, obviously having connection like Gonzo, Pineda, who played there. It comes full circle and it's really nice to see, to be honest. And hopefully we can have many more games and big moments against big teams.
I think about sort of fate in these moments. And I was on the draft floor, when you were drafted, when Seattle celebrated, oh my God, did we just get him in this position? And life sometimes hangs on little moments like that, right? Like somebody makes a decision under pressure. They want you, well, we can get something in the draft. It feels like your career is hanging on that moment. And to go to Seattle, it tips it in a direction that now takes us here. Walk me through that draft day for you and reflect a little bit on just sort of the, I don't know if it's fortune, but a little bit of fortune of like getting into the place where you can thrive, be yourself, and maximize your abilities.
Yeah, first and foremost, I think Greg Berhalter said it best. He thought it was rigged. You know, he told me that it was destiny and it was always going to happen. And it started the day before, though. I think, seeing Schmetzer in the elevator just out of nowhere. I'm going for a meal and I see him and he just kind of winks at me and then he walks away. And
that's what might happen. Huh?
Yeah. And then, you know, the draft day is just crazy, right? Like I see so many names going by and I'm just thinking to myself, like, when is my name going to be called? And I could make an impact and I need someone to believe in me. And then obviously having Weibel, who was my assistant coach in college. So I'm like, all right, RSL's up. That's where I'm going, you know, and the scarf comes up, you know, and I see Garth and Wibes talking and going back and forth, Garth sweating over there. And then, I see the scarves change and I'm like, wow, this just happened. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I couldn't have asked for a better draft, to be honest.
And now you're on the brink of, we hope, history. No jinx here. What would it mean to you personally, to this club, to the league, when you think about the stakes on Wednesday night? What pops in your mind?
Well, I think after winning MLS Cup, you know, myself and Jordan had a conversation. We were talking about how winning Champions League would be like the cherry on top of everything. And when we had this draw, when we saw León in front of us, we thought, you know, we could do some damage.
Yeah.
And so cherry on top of everything is the right phrase, I think, for that.
All right, let's see a cherry. Thanks, Chris. Appreciate your time, man.
Let's do it, guys. Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
It's an AT&T 5G call to the field. We keep them rolling through. Jordan Morris is here. What's up, Jordan? How's it going?
Good. How are you guys?
Good.
What can we complain about?
Yeah, we just got the inside scoop on a conversation between you and Christian after MLS Cup, I'm guessing 2019, about a cherry on top. this week is about putting the cherry on top, so to speak. Do you remember that conversation, or is he just over here pulling our chain a little bit?
I'm going to throw him under the bus. I'm if you remind me, I might remember.
It's about winning the CCL, that would be the next step. Yeah. When did you guys start thinking about this, start dreaming about this?
I mean, I think as a club, obviously we've won the other trophies that you can win. And with a couple MLS Cups, the teams won a Supporters Shield, Open Cups. So this is the kind of the logical next step. And we felt like, especially coming into this year, that we had the quality to make a run and win this tournament. And so to be this close and to have pretty much a one game final at home is really exciting.
What does it mean for you, the Seattle guy, to sort of put this city in history?
Yeah, it'd be amazing. I mean, it's similar feeling to the 2019 final, knowing that we get to play at home in front of over 60,000 fans. And, you know, we're super fortunate here to have the fan base that we do. So I think all the guys are just looking forward to getting out there.
We're curious, outside of the game, how often do people come up to you and say, like, CCL, man, do it?
Yeah, I mean, it's people are excited. You see that, you know, we train here at Starfire. It's an open facility, and all the fans, you can just tell the excitement that they have and how much it would mean to them as well. So we know the importance of the game for not only the club, but for the fans.
How are these games different? Like, you play MLS games, you play CCL games. Do they feel different? Is the game different? Is the officiating different? Like, what's different?
Yeah, I think sometimes the officiating can be different, and I think the games feel a little bit different. Yeah, it's a different opponent, different style of play sometimes, and so you have to adjust to that as you get into these later rounds. I think the intensity just goes up, and the feeling around the game, the importance around the game, you know, feels a little bit higher. So yeah, it has a different feel to it, but it's really exciting.
You play sort of similar people week to week. How different is the preparation experience of now, you know, playing a team in Pumas you'll never play again?
Yeah, and it's interesting not knowing their guys quite as well, because sometimes you watch film on MLS teams and you're like, yeah, you know, we kind of know how they're going to play, and we've played against them.
Or played with them,
exactly. They're teammates with the national team. But, no, it's interesting. I think everyone's maybe more turned on in film, alert, and really trying to understand how they play. And I think having that game against them last week will help us.
How did you guys think you played in that game? We thought you weren't at your very best.
We weren't at our best, and we know that as a team, especially going forward. I don't think that we were at our best. We still created a couple chances that we feel like we could have buried. But I think if you asked us before the game, coming out of there with a draw, we would have taken it in a heartbeat. So it doesn't necessarily really matter how we play. We know that we need to play better in this game at home to win it also.
You're still a young player, and yet we couldn't even list all the finals and big qualifiers and all those moments for you. What's your process with pressure and big games? How do you handle it?
I think it's just exciting. That's what you play for. That's what you live for. That's kind of what you've dreamed about growing up, is to play in games like this. And they, you know, we've been fortunate to play in a lot here in Seattle, but they don't, you know, they really don't come around that often. And so you really have to take advantage of them and enjoy the moment. Obviously there's some pressure, but and some expectations around the game and the feel of the game, but you really got to enjoy the moment, and I just can't wait to get out there.
So you don't close it out. You like to live in it and feel the big moment?
For sure. I think it's important to, I mean, I think in a sense, yeah, you try to close some of it out, push out the outside noise, focus on kind of what we can do as a team. I think that's the main focus is, and like you said, we didn't quite play up to our potential. So it's focusing on what we can do as a team, and that I think kind of brings everyone together and on the same page.
How do you sleep night before? Tuesday night, you can be good to go. Is it like not even a problem? You're crashing out on the couch, just like normal night? Or does it get a little bit staring at the ceiling, imagining?
Yeah.
What are you saying?
I think it's, you know, I sleep pretty well once I fall asleep, but I think getting to sleep sometimes before games like this is tough because you're just playing it in your head and kind of that visualization aspect, picturing, you know, big moments in the game the next day. So I think getting to sleep might be tough, but once I'm asleep, it's all good.
One of the guys who has stepped up big is Christian Roldan. We just talked to him. He's like really good. He's been really good. Yeah. What have you seen from him? Obviously, you're close, but like, he is, I was saying to him, I think he's one of the first names now when you talk about slowing the Seattle attack or what you need to do to win a championship. He's kind of comes up first now.
Yeah, he's done really, really well. Obviously, he's switched kind of playing as a winger now, but he brings a lot of pace and power, and he works really hard and gives everything that he has, and his, especially, you know, getting assists this year, he's done really, really well with that, getting down the line. I think him and his brother have a really good relationship on that side, creating chances and being putting the balls in the box for us. So I think they've both done really well. Christian, yeah, has done really, really well, and we're just fortunate to have him.
What would being first mean? Like, in the sense of bragging rights, you're in these U.S. camps, you're just thinking about the history of this league. You know, sometimes we can get outside of it and it feels very present, but like, if you guys win this, and just being here is historic, if you guys win this, that's forever. Like, you'll always have that moment for yourself, for the league, for everybody involved in this club.
Yeah, I think it would mean everything. I think that that's what we're playing for, is to be the first team to do it. And like you said, it's something that you can't have taken away from you. And I think all the guys, the whole staff, everyone involved in the club understands that. So that's what we're playing for.
Do we get to skydive off the Space Needle?
What? I would never do that. I'm a little heights don't. That's not my thing. But yeah, it would be a big party, I think, in Seattle.
Somebody might get to. Yeah. Let's take a bigger picture for you. I just wonder. You've done the rehab, the ACL stuff. How do you feel? How do you compare it to that previous instance? Like, where do you feel like you're on the path line? I remember after the first one, there was a weight. You were easing back, and there was like an explosion. Do you have like a timeline you feel like you're on?
Yeah. So I was kind of thinking about this the other day, and I know that there's things that I need to keep working on coming back from my injury. I think for the last one in 2019, where I felt like I really, got back to myself and even became a better player, was in the summer, kind of after the Gold Cup, and had a little injury kind of in maybe May, something like that, and then came back from that. And in the summer, late summer was really, I really felt like I came back and became a the player I was before. And I feel like I've definitely had moments kind of after this recovery, and I think I'm farther along than I was in the last one, but I know I still have things that I can keep working on, little things that I feel like aren't quite back yet that I need to get back. And again, that's just a repetition of getting games and continue to work in training on those little things. But I feel like I've come out better in this one, and I just have to keep going to come back like I did last time.
Late summer peak, maybe into the fall, that could be decent time.
Yeah, exactly.
It was a big year. Just
yeah.
How do you stay grounded with it, but also acknowledge the opportunity that sits in front of you?
I think it's not thinking too far ahead. Taking every day, knowing that there is a lot of opportunities here, a lot of really exciting things to look forward to. But all the focus is on what I can do every day to continue to get better and put myself and the team in a good position, and not trying to get too far ahead. But of course, it's an incredibly exciting year, and there's a lot to really look forward to.
Wednesday. Yep. We're all looking forward to that.
Exactly.
We'll let you go, man. Go get recovery in.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
It's an AT&T 5G call to the field, keeping it rolling with Brian Schmetzer, Seattle legend. I was looking up on your Wikipedia page, as I like to do. 20 years ago, you coached your first match.
20?
Yeah. 2002, wow. Correct?
Could have been, yeah.
Yeah. So
are you taking into account junior soccer, youth soccer?
I could if you'd like me to. Okay. We could do, but that goes back to the legend part.
Okay.
This has been a two-decade journey here.
Yeah.
What's this week feel like to you? Have you reminisced at all, or is this just, life as the head coach of the Sounders?
Yeah. I mean, I'm the type of person that kind of, it takes me a while to sit back and reflect, because right now we're in a moment. I mean, the guys are still in there working. We're still trying to make sure that all the details are done, and all the little minutia that might affect the outcome of the game on Wednesday. So it takes me a while to process stuff. I mean, after the 2019 final, it took me a good 6 months to kind of really look back and sit back and say, man, that was cool. There will be some moments though that, I go back and I see some of the guys that have come before me, players and coaches, that I'm happy for. If that makes sense, I'm happy for them to be part of this. you know, because look, the spotlight will be on the players. There'll be some smaller spotlights on me. I get that. It's just part of the gig. But, you know, where do all the guys that, you know, work in the background, where do they fall? Where do the, you know, Roger Levesque, Leighton O'Brien, Danny Jackson, Taylor Graham, you know, from that team that started, well, some of those guys started a little later in 2002, Viet Nguyen, Darren Sawatsky, I mean, Preston Burpo, some of those guys from that 2000 team. I'm happy that they can be part of what the Sounders tradition is. You know, Jimmy Gabriel, my mentor, who we, you know, recently lost a while back, you know, him, Alan, some of those guys that have partaken in our history. I'm happy for them.
Were they looking down on you at the end of that game in Mexico City on Christian Roldan?
Jimmy, for
like,
sure.
Like, you're going to kick him. You're going to kick him right in the knee, and then we're going to have video review in CCL. It's going to come out on MLS's side. That had to feel a little bizarre, right?
Yeah, funny story, though. Jimmy said that your luck always evens out kind of at, you know, at the end. And, you know, if you take last year, for example, I mean, look, we won 13 games in a row. On 13 games unbeaten, right? Start off, new record, all that. Our luck at the end of the year wasn't the same. I mean, we should have lost a couple of those games early on in that 13-game run. So maybe it's true.
When you think back to 20 years ago, 30 years ago in this city, did you ever think a moment like this of a regional championship, a sold-out football stadium? Did you see this?
Probably not, because I probably didn't think like that. But it's a real relevant question because, you know, some of my fondest memories in my soccer career certainly are, you know, playing and growing up with a bunch of guys from Lake City, you know, kicking the ball around, all of that. But, you know, the World Cup coming in 2026, I was down there in 94 at some of the games. I was in Stanford. I went to the Coliseum. I was there for the 2-1 against Colombia. In somewhere in the DNA of the United States, I believe it was there. And so that's why I was always, you know, throughout the years going, God, when is the United States going to get another World Cup? When are we going to be able to showcase, you know, the growth of our sport on that level? And it's coming pretty soon. And maybe that's why that connection is there. But yeah, I think some part of me thinks that even 20 years ago, there was certainly going to be growth. And yeah, here it is.
What would being the first team to win CCL mean? Big picture, but just for the Sounders.
Yeah, there's a big if there because there's a very motivated team, motivated coach, good guy. Talked to him, Andres. He was very kind to me, very respectful. So I appreciated that. But yes, if we're fortunate enough to go through and finish the job, certainly it would mean a lot. And I always start with it means a lot for the guys there in that locker room first. Then, you know, guys like Andy Rose that came on my staff this year, Freddie, Brecky, Tommy, for us, we've been working at it pretty hard. You know, the whole office, you know, Garth, Greg, Adrian, that side of things, the guys in the equipment room, all that, it'd be happy. And then for the fans, I think it'd be really massive for our fans. And then I'd probably reach the next level and say, okay, yeah, it's pretty cool for MLS. It's finally happened. It'll probably open the door for more success, I believe.
Yeah.
I'm a firm believer that we're getting closer. So somebody has to do it. So
I will say I appreciate this, that we're sitting here talking. There's arcade games in the background because we're still not totally there yet. We're not Manchester City. Nothing's a floating island.
Somebody has an ice-ice baby ringtone that's been going on.
I appreciate, though, that we're still grounded here.
You did a wonderful job there, Brian, of not mentioning yourself at all. But for a coach, too, and for yourself to be first – to have something that no other American, no other MLS manager, they don't have it. You would have it. Would that mean something to you?
Yeah, of course it would. Look, I don't want to downplay the importance of this moment for myself or anybody else. It's obviously a big moment. But what I always go back to is there's a lot of people that have come before me that have paved the way for me, you know, starting with Zig. I mean, he did a lot for me. And then, you know, some of the near misses that we've had in our league, you know, have kind of started to sway the things. I mean, our League Cup run last year kind of helped us this year, you know. And then, God, I wish Bruce would have, you know, made it past Pumas. We would have had three MLS teams. You know, it would have been great. I mean, so there's people that have paved the way. But, yes, it goes back to my nature ask me that same question 6 months from now when I get a chance to really
wrap
my head around it. Yeah, of course. It'll be a big deal.
Here's a question for you. Did you think Dineno was going to start and play that game?
We knew it.
Yeah?
For sure.
Yeah.
I mean, I would play a guy with half a leg on a final. I mean, not many people know that Nico wasn't 100% in 2020, you know?
Yeah.
So, but you play your star players in finals. You have to.
Yeah. Do you have a game plan on how to slow him down?
He comes in like 4 minutes. 4 minutes, yeah. He scores a goal this weekend. Another 4 minutes, he's got another one.
Puma's well, he's obviously in a good run of form, great run of form. And, you know, the goal he scored against us, the corner kick, I mean, against Pachuca. I mean, he's in a really good run of form. We'll try. What we will try and do is deny service and then make sure our marking in the box is a little cleaner. So get a body on him.
Yeah. How well did you think you guys played in that game? I mean, we talk about XG and performance, and there's sort of a, you know, we're on the show afterwards, like, we think the Sounders played better than Pumas, but they didn't play well, I'm sure, by your definition.
No. I thought our possession was too rushed. I thought our transition was not very good. I mean, we can watch the film. I mean, you can go back and watch the film. How many moments where we intercepted a pass or a ball came to us, and normally our transition is really good, especially away from home, games away from home, we've been good. Even our transition moments when we've pressed higher up the field at Lumen, you know, I think about the Lyon game and even NYCFC, you know, we'd press a little higher up the field, we'd win the ball, we'd be on top of them. They weren't very good in Mexico City. So I think we can definitely play better.
One of the things that you talked about, I think, going into the first leg, which has been interesting to watch, is Albert Rusnak's role in this team. And there's moments when I've watched this year, I think of the Galaxy game, where you guys can play some unbelievable soccer because everyone can play in that group. What have you made of his, you know, coming into the team and sort of how he can affect this group?
Great. He helps us in our possession for sure. You know, if we're going back to Albert and this particular game, what I thought, you know, both he and JP were a little too deep for my liking. One can drop in, the other one's got to stay forward, you know, and make sure that that's a, and the best example of that was the first goal against NYCFC, when he comes from a deeper position and it's a good sequence, there's 13 or 14 passes, beautiful. We have patience, he comes in at the right moment, it's a great ball by Jordan, of course, but that's Albert.
Right.
And if he can do that more often for us, and he and JP, because look, they've played together how many games? Five games together? Six? I don't know, four?
It's early. Scratching the surface of the relationship.
Exactly. So if they work on that and they can figure it out, I think we'll be a lot better. But he's been great. He fits in the locker room. He's cool with all the guys, young and old, you know, nationalities. He fits in with everybody.
I remember watching Joao Paulo play for the first time for you in CCL and just thinking, this dude's a dog. Like, watch out for him. You seem like a coach would like a guy who wears all black cleats. Am I on to something with that?
Oh yeah.
Was that the first scouting?
I love those cleats.
Love JP. So I gotta tip my cap to a former person that had a lot of influence in this club, Chris Henderson. He was the one that really testified to JP's character, and Chris was spot on. I mean, JP, he fights in training, he works in training, he never wants to lose. Of course, he wears the black, but he plays like he belongs in those shoes. Yep. It's not like he's just wearing the black shoes because he thinks he's bad. He actually is a bad, and he backs it up.
How much of this game is mental? We loved, we were doing the watch along show, and we loved all the kids. They luckily caught you a number of times doing the whistle and then going to the head. Every time they caught you, just, and it's so much of this competition has been mental for MLS teams.
Well, where I thought my team could have done better was, you know, in those critical moments, you know, did they just want to win so bad? Was it just like they're so wound up about winning? When we just needed to let the game kind of percolate, kind of go, let it flow, let it come, you know, just have that little bit more patience in those early stages. And I think we would have had a better performance. But, you know, of course, there's emotion involved and penalty happened and, you know, VAR and all of the things on their side and Nuhu and everybody and Steph save. And is he off the line? Is he not? I mean, it's human nature. I love the fact that my guys are passionate about what they're doing. that's part of our strength, but it can be, man, you go over the cliff sometimes.
While we're looking the cliff in the face, yeah. Wednesday, you guys got to do the job. We'll just be on the sideline hoping to celebrate with the team wearing Rave Green.
67,000 friends, right?
Yeah. Should be a fun afternoon. Should be a fun evening working into it and hopefully a fun night. Brian, thank you so much for your time. We appreciate you.
You're welcome. Thanks, guys.
Well, it's here, man.
Yeah,
it's almost here. Monday's over. Tuesday will feel like an eternity, and we'll be sitting there all day Wednesday just waiting.
Yeah.
Waiting for the big moment. What are you thinking about right now? Like after talking to those four guys, being immersed here in Seattle, just being somewhere in person. That alone feels like something to me. To be here to witness this and not see it on TV, I hope the outcome is what I dream about, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I would say I think the big thing, especially talking to Schmetzer and Garth, but also Jordan and his background here and Christian of, you know, all that's gone into something like this.
Yeah.
Like I thought Schmetzer said it really well of like their loss in Leagues Cup, Bruce's loss with the Galaxy in 2009, all those little moments, that's what building a culture is, have led to this team being able to not play their best and get a result in Mexico or open up and blow León out, which was like, I mean, you were at the Leagues Cup where the other way with SKC recently, right? Yeah. So I think that's one of the things I take away. And then it's different. Right, this game is—it's a different opponent, it's a different moment, but everyone feels comfortable. And like when you come to Starfire, it always feels that way. I think there's something about the environment here of like it's a public place, so it's not as like hyper intense. The trees are around; it's very Seattle, but it's just at no point today did anything feel different than if the Sounders were playing on Wednesday night. It doesn't feel like a CCL moment for them, and that to me is promising.
I think to further that point, like I think about RSL in that moment and why it was so big. And I think it was because in a lot of ways, we didn't really believe that it was possible. They were doing this thing that people didn't believe was possible. And if you sit next to these guys and you talk to them or watching training and seeing the quality and the coaching staff, even from Brian on down, like you just feel belief. And I don't think that belief is unique to Seattle anymore, though they're the ones that are here and trying to make history in this moment. I think that belief is starting to percolate throughout the league, whether it's NYCFC or whether it's Sporting Kansas City in previous editions of this competition, or Toronto, or even Montreal back in the day. Or
Montreal this year.
Yeah. You know, MLS teams believe they can, and that was a big step to get over. Now we got to do it.
Yeah.
Right? Like, belief and doing it, two different things. Seattle have the opportunity. They win a game at home against an, at the worst, evenly matched opponent. And I don't have the ability to imagine what it will be like to be on that field, to feel like, I don't know if I'll be able to grasp it. You know, you talk to Schmetz, he's like, it took me 6 months. Like, I think we will be able to, but we're not even doing anything. Like, we're just there to enjoy it. So, like, I have a huge amount of anticipation for this. I'm so thankful to be here. I'm so thankful for the 67,000 people that are going to make it special. Yeah. For the players, for the coaches, for all of us, and I hope that the result is not free, so to speak. Yeah. We'll see. Tuesday night, the Georgian Dragon. I almost screwed that up. We will be there at 6:30 p.m. local time. So if you're in Seattle, you're listening to this, you're watching the show, you're thinking, I would love to have somebody buy me a beer or a drink or whatever it is and talk soccer, we'll be there to do that.
Or you in Boise or Portland or Vancouver and you've got nothing to do on Tuesday.
I've heard some people who are flying in, so join us. And Produce and Anders will be there as well. So if you want to be with one of your brethren,
you'll see him. He'll be the one who cuts his arm and then just green is spewing out of him.
Yeah, so it'll be good. And then we will do the post-game show. Final whistle will happen. You'll see the trophy lift. We'll see who lifts that trophy. But as soon as the trophy lift ends, we will be right with you on YouTube to either celebrate or, knock on wood, commiserate. Either or. The emotions are strong. They're powerful. That's why we love this tournament. And that's it for us from Seattle. It's been a joy to be here. Hope you enjoy your week. We'll see you on Wednesday night. Adios.